Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, a very good evening. Welcome to the AFC Wimbledon fan show, where this evening we'll be celebrating the greatest goalless draw in your football team's history,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, of course, you two were there on the fun bus up to Bradford.
But Nick was not.
Was
your brother not driving?
My brother was driving, but yeah, that's why I didn't go. Do you think I'm getting a bus with my brother driving? Do you think I'm, well, not no. sound of mind? Like,
we did have a ghost seat for Nick on the way up, but... But George Jones, who now you've discovered is a real boy, he came back with us. He didn't go up there.
Because he had to get there 5 hours before
everyone
else.
We left Kings Meadow at just after 10 and we got there at 3. Not too bad, I thought. Mm. But George said, no, I want to get there for midday. And he took a picture of him himself outside the memorial, fire memorial, at 12:50. So he was there 4 hours and 40 minutes before kickoff.
As I pointed out to him, he could sit and watch Titanic
before
kickoff. If he loaded it up onto like an iPad or something, he could sit and watch a film. Couldn't you, like,
yeah, you could easily.
Whilst you're waiting, easily. Like,
yeah. I like that. Yeah. Things George could have done in the time.
Yeah, George, with your life, you could have done so much more with those few hours. But no, just standing in a street in Bradford.
Yeah. He did go to the Bradford club shop, though. So, not all wasted.
Colour me jealous.
Well, he won't be able to do it next season, will he?
No, not there.
He won't.
No.
So, I mean, was this a game where we're going to be not talking about actually what happened too much on the football field? Was it an uneventful goalless?
As far as I am aware, very little happened. In fact, I was following it from home and I was watching the Southend game. Had I fallen asleep at 5:30 and woken up at 7:30, I wouldn't have actually missed anything because our whatever you want to call it, our fate did not change throughout the day. We didn't drop into the bottom four at any point, did we?
No.
We were always safe, and we sort of avoided all the drama that was going on, chiefly Southend and Plymouth.
Yeah, well, I decided not to even look at my phone. I did not get my phone out of my pocket.
But you must
at
have.
Any point.
You haven't got Twitter anyway, have you? So.
No, but I didn't need Twitter. However, everybody around me spent the entire game on their phone, so as soon as goals came in, we knew that Southend had scored early, and then, oh my God, it's horrible. And then the only time we kind of got really nervous was when Southend scored with 3 minutes to go. Mm. We thought, okay, that's a lot. As long as we don't concede. And as we said, we gave away a really soft corner. We thought, this is just the season in microcosm. We give away a soft corner, the only soft corner we gave away, and we could just see one of our own players slicing it in at the back post for an own goal, which has happened at Bradford before. But it didn't. It transpired that we didn't need any more than the point. And it was a dreadful game. But last season we stayed up with an awful 0-0 draw against Doncaster. And now we've done it again in Bradford. So it's always the Yorkshire goalless bore draw.
Yeah.
But it was fine. It was a great day. And then the celebrations, I'm sure people have seen, I'm sure you've seen it, Jacob.
Yeah.
On various social media platforms of the celebrations and people going nuts. And slap the scene on the bus and Aaron Ramsdale conducting the crowd from the stand. It was a great occasion.
Yeah.
But a terrible, terrible game of football.
So let's start from early on then, 10 a.m, all meeting up on the bus. What was the atmosphere and mood were like? Was it a nervy one, or was kind of everyone fairly confident that, you know, that the hard work had been done? It was just kind of getting across the line.
We didn't talk about the game that much, did we?
No.
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I just think we're trying to avoid it.
As I say, Chris was driving. They were just holding on for dear life and shaking and gritted teeth. So, yeah.
Kevin.
To be fair, he was very good.
I was going
to
say, let's dismiss these vicious allegations.
Yep. I know, Chris.
You've never been in a car with my brother.
Oh,
my word.
Kevin has, and I trust
Kevin.
I
have now, and he's absolutely fine. I feel my life was in danger at any point. Only when we stopped at Woolley Edge Services, which is the worst service station in the world. Dreadful place.
Why? What was particularly bad about it?
It was kind of, you got off the bus and you've walked into 1983. It was the oldest.
Did you know 1983? Me and Nick don't know 1983.
No, I wasn't.
Nick nearly
does. I wasn't born then.
No, Nick, you didn't.
But quite some considerable distance.
Yeah.
I did go to Bradford. The last time I went to Bradford, I think, was 2011 or 12.
It's not changed.
And I thought it was. Like, I imagine that's what 1975 looked like. Yeah.
It's actually getting like.
It's going backwards.
Yeah.
All right. So
I was
going to
say it's getting older, but of course it's getting older.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yes.
Woolley Edge is kind of, I think it's still in Yorkshire. Extraordinary place. It's just like we've gone back. Remember that programme, Goodnight Sweetheart? No. Nicholas Lyndhurst before my time. modern day London turns a corner and he ends up in the Second World War. I mean, it's very similar.
If anybody has watched this show, please call in and have a discussion.
Good night, sweetheart, with Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Because me and Nick are struggling to contribute right now.
We're too young to remember it. However, I do believe I've seen it on like UK Dave. UK Bulge.
I would have seen it at the time.
Okay.
What were we talking about? Yeah, so we didn't talk about the game.
The service station.
But we didn't talk about the game a huge amount. I think we just tried to subconsciously avoid it. We talked about other stuff. We talked about the season and what's gone wrong and what's gone right and players we'd keep and players we wouldn't keep. We recorded a Facebook Live show, first time for some months. That was quite fun. But it was just, we just talked about other stuff. Whatever we talk about, it's not going to make it any worse. And I felt confident till Saturday morning, woke up and thought, oh, hang on, we could go down. I hadn't really thought about the fact we could go down that easily. And then, of course, it wasn't that far away. We were one goal away from going down. And we had Plymouth to thank for conceding 3 goals in 8 minutes last week. We had Billy Key to thank for missing that penalty against us for Accrington. We'd have gone down. We'd have been in League Two. We'd have been looking at whether we play Salford or Fylde. Please, everyone, it's Fylde, not Flyde. It's Fylde. The F-Y-L-D-E. It's not
You shouldn't
Flyde.
Have said that.
I shouldn't have said that, but it is Fylde. It's the Fylde coast. Blackpool's postcode is F-Y.
I've never heard anyone call it Flyde.
Have you not? Oh, no. you haven't been around us then, have you?
No. Just on what Kevin was just saying about the topics they discussed on that bus up to Bradford, the key moments, the highlights of the season, the lowlights, all various thoughts and kind of almost like your end of season awards. I want people to get in touch this evening. We'll discuss them later on in the show, but let's start getting them in now. At Love Sport Radio is the Twitter handle with various moments and thoughts and highlights and lowlights of that season. I'd imagine there's a fair few and be wide ranging because it has been one of the most. I mean, how do you rate now it's done? Where does this season sit for you? Because last season was significantly more comfortable.
Have you?
Would you say in a weird way you've enjoyed this one more?
No. I've never been happier to see the back of a season in my life. I was wondering about the question because the question.
But now it's done in the circumstance that you've done it. Does that not bring a certain degree of kind of euphoria and proudness of your football team as opposed to just finishing in mid table?
Yes, I think you split the season into two and you say that for Wally Downs it's been a successful season and Glyn Hodges it's been a successful season. But as the season as a whole, no, it's been horrendous for many levels, on many levels.
I'd agree.
And I think you're right. We've ended the season because we've survived and everyone's very happy that we survived because we were so far adrift. It's a miracle we survived, to be honest with you.
Oh, it is.
But what we can't do is we can't suddenly think because we've only lost 1 in 12 at the last, then we've stayed up and stuff like that. We can't think that everything was solved purely because we got a different manager in charge. There needs to be a long look at what went wrong with our squad this summer, and there needs to be big changes for next season. Otherwise, if we don't make big changes, I don't think we do the same. I don't think we make a great escape next season.
Are you confident that is something that the club are very aware of?
Yeah.
You know, they realise that the manager is a great thing and it's clearly worked out, but ultimately lots still needs to be done and big changes need to happen. It's not just a matter of, right, well, we've got the right manager in charge now. It'll do itself.
The same way that the successful formula we found on the pitch of playing 3-5-2, whichever way you want to look at it, it's 3-5-2 to me, that was stumbled upon because it was necessary, because that's at one point we seemed to have more defenders than anything else, and we just kind of, well, let's play them. He didn't say, I'm not taking any credit away from Wally and Glyn, but I think that 3-5-2 was stumbled upon and it seemed to work. In the same way that Wally Downs' appointment was not what many fans wanted.
And it wasn't the original
appointment. It was certainly not the original appointment that the football club board wanted. And we, as far as we know, that we're still not quite sure how Wally got the job. The fact that he did get the job in the end was fantastic. Whether the presence of Glyn in the equation, Glyn with one N, everyone. Sorry, I'm on a spelling our players' names right round at the moment. That may have had something to do with it, but as far as we know, that Wally was not even considered, was he? I mean, we all know this is an known secret that Kevin Nolan was pretty nailed on and was virtually going to be offered the job. When we
he was offered the job,
and that Wally Downs was going to be offered the job, and then once those social media posts came out, it was made clear that maybe he wasn't going to get it, but he got it. And there were significantly influential people in the club who did not want Wally to get the job for various reasons. In the end, it worked.
Mm.
I think we stumbled upon getting Wally in and getting Glyn in, and we've stumbled upon a successful formula. You cannot stay up two or three seasons in a row by stumbling across success. The fact that we're all celebrating as an achievement staying up with that squad of players, we shouldn't be celebrating staying up. We should have been 13th, 14th, something like that. From Wally's first game, December the 8th, we were 12th, I think. Had the season started in December?
Oh, I see. We'd
have been 12th.
Yeah, I think we'd have been comfortably table. I think
with Aaron Ramsdale in goal for the first 22 games of the season, we'd have. I mean, that's those ones ifs, but he should have started the season. We did have him on loan, arranged for the beginning of the season, and then he got injured in a training at Bournemouth, and we had to get Tom King. And Tom King was, he's not as good as Aaron Ramsdale. But let's be fair, not many goalkeepers are.
No.
But I genuinely think Aaron Ramsdale would be an England goalkeeper, not that far in the future.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We were very lucky. We had a mid-table League One side with bottom of League One tactics with a Premier League goalkeeper. Stayed up.
Thank you. Gary Fletcher's been in touch already. He says he's still emotional, thinks it's going to take a couple more days. He says the day was going so well until Kevin got a KFC and I didn't.
Yes, no, this is a small story. You know, if anyone follows me on Facebook, you will have seen a picture I posted of Dean Parsons, our friend who came with us. Dean Parsons is the person that's inside Hayden. Sorry, children, if you thought Hayden is a real womble.
Yeah. What?
I know, my head is exploding about this. He's inside Hayden.
Apparently
what?
So. I know.
Hayden is a
Next
real...
Next thing you'll be telling me... No.
No, don't say that. Don't say they'll... No, don't say that. So Dean is a man that's comfortable in a fancy dress costume. So he brought with him a chicken outfit, and I took a photograph of him at the service station at Leicester Forest East.
Oh, lovely place.
With Dean Parsons dressed as a chicken ordering KFC. I thought that was quite funny. But they forgot that we were coming. Six coaches turned up, plus our minibus, plus the unofficial coach. So like 450 Wimbledon fans turn up, and they were closing. So everyone was shutting. So KFC said, we haven't got any chicken left. Eventually they found some.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good. I think they did find this chicken from somewhere. But Gary Fletcher, bless him, did actually get there after I did, and I believe we were one of the last people to get served, and he didn't get his KFC. So sorry, Gary, next time.
What a day you had, Kevin.
Yeah, we got chicken.
The last bit of chicken and Wimbledon staying up. Yeah. That sounds like the perfect
It
day.
Was the last chicken in the shop, as the phrase goes, and it really was.
Not to rub it in, Gary, but I also got a KFC last night.
Oh, Gary. Oh, sorry,
yeah,
mate.
Did you?
From where?
From New Malden.
Did you?
Yeah, it's a lie.
Right, I'm going to take a break. Let's talk about Wimbledon and football in a minute, shall we?
Love sport.
2,000 of you headed up to Bradford. What a turnout that was, Kevin.
Amazing. If anyone didn't go and seen the photographs, it is incredible. It's like you're seeing somebody else's away follow because you don't really bring that many. But yeah, I mean, the crowd was put as 17,800. No way was that 17,000 people in that ground. No way.
What, less or more?
Oh, there was far less, half.
Yeah.
There's probably 10,000.
Was it an Arsenal situation? Tickets sold. And there was Bradford fans have just stopped turning up.
There was whole blocks that there were no Bradford fans, one or two.
An Arsenal situation just with added noise.
Yeah, I mean, yes. The fact that they...
You know I've got an Arsenal producer. And we're right in my eye line.
Yeah, I know.
If you can feel eyes going
I'm not looking
the back
that
of
direction.
Your head,
I'm not looking that
that's
direction.
Him.
Yeah.
But I can see him. Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that it was Bradford's last home game of the season, they were already relegated. It's not a great game to watch. But fans came because it was the nearest game to the anniversary of the fire disaster, which we commemorated very, very well, I have to say. Everyone was very silent and they were appreciative. And then at 56 minutes, there was applause and two of our players joined in, which I thought was during play. So two players applauding, which Bradford fans were very pleased about. They said it was a nice touch. I thought I'd rather you concentrate on the match. Anyway,
I thought Trotter had left.
Yes, but Aaron Ramsdale was clapping. They had a photograph of it. But we laid wreaths. The club laid wreaths, and it was all very well done. I think that's why Bradford were there. But there was no way 17,000. But there was almost 2,000 of us, and we made a massive noise.
Yeah.
It must have helped. Like Luton, everyone says we sucked the ball into the net for that last game. I think for this one, we just blew the ball sideways. So it stayed away from both goals for most of that game.
But going on what I said earlier about the season, the way it has ended... Do you think that you mentioned how brilliant it would be for those kind of, you know, numbers to follow you week in, week out, that the guys who did go along to that one and enjoyed that day as a Wimbledon fan are now more likely to start going to more away games next season? In a strange way, because this season has been what it is, it could benefit longer term.
Possibly. I think we had a very similar situation when we stayed up on the last day in League Two, which was, bizarrely, when we were struggling in that second half of the season, we were selling out every single home game and the away attendances did go up. So I think our fans will get behind us in times of need, as it were, and I think that probably goes for most clubs, and you'll probably find we'll fall back into a similar pattern next season, unless, of course, we're challenging at the top of the table, which is not going to happen. But yeah, I think we've seen it. We saw at Oxford, what did you take at Oxford? 1,300, pretty much sold out what we had to take there. Same at Bradford. Luton, we took a large number, especially considering it was changed, the date of the game was changed. So we do, we are very good, I think. We do get behind the team. And we might moan and whinge and be negative pretty much all season long, but comes to the crunch, we are there and we're very supportive fans. And I think we do. I think we're very, very good fans. It was pointed out to me a few years ago. We don't tend to really get on the players' back. We're a very patient crowd. Yeah. I think other clubs in the situations we were in, sort of September, October time with that run, fans would have turned far more vociferously at a game on a match day. And we're not like that. So I think that speaks volumes about us.
So, of the teams relegated then, Plymouth, Walsall, Scunthorpe, Bradford, any real kind of major surprises? Is that how you saw it playing out on the final day?
No, if you look at, we do predictions.
I was just going to get them up.
And I think I had Rochdale and Wickham to go down.
Yeah, I think
we did it a few weeks ago anyway.
Nick will find his brother's predictions for the four playoff places in League One.
Sorry,
have you got them there?
I've just seen them. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Do they include Bradford, Scunthorpe, and Plymouth?
Nearly. So, Chris's predictions for the playoffs were Southend, Plymouth, Portsmouth. He got a point for that.
Yeah.
And Bradford. Yeah. Scunthorpe to finish 14th in his opinion. So,
But Scunthorpe were in the playoffs last year.
No, I know.
Well, they all have been at some point challenging for the playoffs in League One of the last. So Scunthorpe in the playoffs, Bradford have been in the playoffs, Walsall were in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and I don't think Plymouth did, but they were certainly pushing hard for them at the end of last season.
They were eighth last season, weren't they?
Yeah.
But you think the last two seasons, Plymouth were started off terribly, then beat us sort of October-ish and went on good runs and stayed up. But this season, they were 12th seven games ago. And then almost like they thought, well, we're safe then.
Yeah.
And then you aren't. I mean, I still think they've got the best player in League One. There's Graham Carey. Well, in League Two now.
His goal yesterday.
There's no way he's going to stay there, surely. You've got Graham Carey and Danny Mayer from Bury, I think are championship players. I don't know why they've spent so long at their respective clubs. But Plymouth is a surprise to me, I think. Scunthorpe, always punching above their weight, tiny budget. Walsall are one of those clubs that you never call. I don't remember the last time Walsall were in League Two. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it would be actually.
A while. But Plymouth was a surprise. It wasn't a surprise when they started the season badly. Then they start picking up. Graham Carey starts playing well. Freddie Ladapo, our friend of the toilet break, Freddie Ladapo. If you know that story, I won't bore you with it. he should have been signing for us, was at the club, said, "Can I just go to the toilet, please?" and never came back.
I did not know that story.
Freddie Ladapo.
Freddie Ladapo, Ladapo, whatever. Ladapo. Ladapo.
Ladapo.
Ladapo. Oh, I see, yeah.
See, yeah.
So then he joined Southend instead, and then they let him go into the season. He went to Plymouth, and he was about the fourth top scorer in the League One. Anyway, decent player. However, not the character we want. But the fact that Plymouth were so high up and looking up, maybe even pushing for the playoffs, all of a sudden plummet back down again. That was the surprise. But I think, I don't know. Bradford have a decent-sized budget, we were told.
Their summer was terrible.
But they've made massive mistakes. Third manager of the season.
Yeah.
Gary Bowyer, the human personality vacuum, takes over. And having had Michael Collins, one of our old players, in charge, it was a kind of strange appointments.
I can't remember which manager it was, but I think didn't they have a manager lined up to take over in the summer? And it fell apart whatever happened at the very last minute.
Yes.
And I'm not wrong in saying they had Simon Grayson in the back end of...
Then he went in the summer.
Yeah.
They did. Yes, you're right. They had somebody else take over.
Lined up who didn't then take over.
Who didn't take
and
over.
And then I think that then Michael screwed Collins up their recruitment, everything. Their summer was just an absolute mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's left them. They've not recovered.
But you look at Scunthorpe. I watched some of the Salford game today, and Graham Alexander, Salford manager, was manager of Scunthorpe.
Yeah.
They were in the playoffs, and they sacked him because they didn't think he was the right person to take them forward. They didn't get through the playoffs. Then they appoint Nick Dawes, and then he gets sacked. He was like the end of last season, beginning of this season. He's now our recruitment manager, yeah, or whatever he is, recruitment director, whatever you call it. Then they get Stuart McCall in, and that doesn't work. Never does with Stuart McCall, let's be fair. And then they've got Andy Dawson, again, a Scunthorpe's a club legend.
Yeah.
So you're looking at four managers in a year and a half from a team that's gone from the playoffs twice to being relegated and finishing second bottom. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the idea that we may be held on to Neil Ardley a month too long. But that, I think what we've done well is we were loyal to him. It paid off. Then it didn't pay off and they quickly acted and we got somebody else in. And that, and I hate that new manager bounce thing, because changing your manager doesn't always work, but it did for us. Mm. And I think Scunthorpe was a lesson. Don't do it like that. Do it like we did it.
Yeah, no, very interesting. Tweets are already coming in with regards to thoughts on the season itself, highs, lows, and various other ones. And also talk about the game yesterday as well. Were you on the pitch? No, you shouldn't have been. But no. Were you on the pitch? Were you celebrating? Tell us your stories. 0208 7020 558.
This is Love Sport.
So talk us through the emotions then, Kevin, because you said, you know, everyone was fully aware, everyone was on the phones and talking about it as anyone would. Was it a feeling of elation or relief or other? How did you feel?
At the end, it was a strange one. At the end, it was definitely relief, but the board did not go up at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
So nobody knew how long was left.
Oh, okay.
The scoreboard in the corner, if you could see, stopped at 90 and then had a plus sign came up, but didn't say how long. And they just sort of thinking, well, no idea. It could be three, it could be four. There wasn't much, nothing happened. I mean, there's only a few subs. There was very little stoppages, no injuries, there's nothing really. And we're just thinking, well, how long is it going to go? Oh, and then the whistle went. Mm. So it's the only time we actually brought it up was, well, it can't be much longer left. And then that was the end of that. So but it was relief, but it was kind of a surprise and relief because we didn't know the game was about to end. There was celebration, but you can see the look on the people's faces on the pitch. Everyone was celebrating, but it wasn't that we've achieved anything. It was the fact that we didn't go down. It wasn't like a, you know, it was an against all odds thing. You look at Leicester winning the Premier League, it was an incredible. So Jake mentioning Leicester for you, but it was an incredible achievement. I don't think that was an incredible achievement. I think what the escape was, but it was the escape from the first 3 months of the season, which is so bad.
Yeah,
we've kind of come away from that.
You're allowed to celebrate.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I do know what you're saying. That you're not celebrating staying up, but it was an incredible turnaround, wasn't it? You know, and it is. I think I won't quite go as far as to say a miracle, but as far as escapes go, over the last few seasons within perhaps League One and League Two, it's right up there. We were one of the very best.
We were 9 points adrift with 15 games to go.
Yeah,
with a goal difference of 10 worse than everybody else, and we've managed to stay up on goal difference.
Yeah,
with the lowest scorers. Yeah, the lowest scorers in the division.
Less than a goal a game.
Less than a goal a game, and we stayed up on goal difference, which you could argue to the cows come home why that is. The answer is Aaron Ramsdale. The fact we had a Premiership quality goalkeeper kept us in. He must have saved us 7-8 points on his own.
Yep.
With incredible saves.
Yeah.
He saved us a point when we could have lost and he's got us a draw. The Oxford game. Mm-hmm. That incredible save in the first half is a brilliant. It's one of the best saves you'll ever see in League One. Kept us up.
Yeah.
That goal goes in, we're down.
Yeah.
You can look at it all the way through this from January the 5th when he's made his debut, all the way through to yesterday, you could pick out probably in every game a save he's made that's kept us in it. And he's a 20-year-old kid. He's incredible.
Yeah. Nick, so talk us through the moment when you realised you were safe yesterday. Where were you and what you were doing?
I was sat on the sofa following events at a combination of Sky Sports and Twitter. And to be honest with you, I said after we won at Scunthorpe that we'd stay up. And I wasn't surprised, to be honest with you. I knew it all along, so it's fine. I was just like, oh, great, done.
We were getting reassuring texts.
Give me more than that.
I promise you, and Kevin will back me up for this, I was pretty much messaging you guys all day yesterday saying,
it'll be fine.
Chill out.
So
we're going to be fine.
You were that one.
I was in no doubt that we were staying up. So
at no point did you not then panic as the goals are going in elsewhere?
The only nagging doubt I had was the fact that we hadn't lost an away game in something like 7 games. I think it was Sunderland, February 2nd.
February 2nd,
I think that was the last time we'd lost an away game. And you thought, you're normally due. Teams don't normally go on these big runs. Our 8 defeats in a row was an anomaly. Teams don't tend to go on these. It's normally about half a dozen games or so, and you normally get a result. You have exceptions, you always do, but these prove the rule, like Man City and Liverpool at the moment, which is just absurd. So I was probably the most confident Wimbledon fan you could find yesterday. So I wasn't surprised. Things do tend to work for us. When it comes to the crunch, like I say, things tend to fall for us, and it fell again for us, and as Kevin said, chiefly this season, because we had a goalkeeper that kept us in many, many games, and Plymouth decided to implode the previous week at Accrington. It's interesting, we talk about reasons we stayed up, and Kevin, we mentioned them earlier, and there are lots of things to it which we could go into detail for, and I won't mention who the individuals were involved, but we had the kit sponsors dinner on Tuesday night, where all the squad and the playing staff and the fans who sponsor their kits come together for a meal and what have you. And there was a question and answer session with Wally Downs, and one person simply asked Wally, what have you done, what's changed for you to get us to within hair's breadth of staying up?
Yeah.
And one member of club staff turned to another member of club staff and simply said, the goalkeeper. And I thought, that's coming from inside, that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, no, that's pretty telling, isn't it?
I just found a WhatsApp message from Nick. Yeah, okay. sent yesterday at 10:10 a.m. with, don't worry guys, it'll be fine.
See, I was never in debt. Once we won at Scunthorpe, that was it. 100% certain we're staying up after that point. Right, so there we go.
Is this a prediction thing you do in general?
I just tend to have a gut feeling about things, and it seems to come true. Most recently at Luton, when I said we'll get a draw out of this,
you did.
Rochdale, when I predicted a last minute winner from a penalty spot, which actually happened.
We got the Nick was typing, we're going to get a last minute penalty. We actually got a last minute penalty. It's the first penalty we'd had for a year.
The first penalty season. So basically, I am Russell Grant or Mystic Meg. I'm not sure I should have actually said that on live radio. No.
Have you ever thought that you could use these powers to...
You'd think I'd be better with my accumulator every week,
wouldn't
you?
I was going to say, gamble responsibly, of course, but you know, if you have this incredible, you know, gut feeling that it's never let you down,
my worry
why don't you use it for greater good, Nick?
I should do, but my worry is, especially with the Rochdale one, which was so weird that I was so convinced this was going to happen, my worry was that if I actually put money on it, then I'd jinx it and it wouldn't happen. So for the greater good, I am sacrificing personal gain for the greater good of...
We all appreciate it.
You're too good a man.
Yeah, I know, I get that a lot.
Right, I've got loads of tweets in. I promise you when we come back, we'll start going through some of them.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah. Sorry, we're just talking about the league too.
We were.
About Sol Campbell, and we'll keep that conversation. Yeah. Off air.
Well done, Sol Campbell. Well done, Macclesfield.
Yes, congratulations, Sol Campbell and Macclesfield. You are in League Two next year. Right, let's go to some of the tweets. Steve Lee's been in touch, says, on regards to the day yesterday, it was up there with the best days for me on the pitch with my lad Charlie at the end. Hugged Bezo and the excellent Rambo. Then in the Bradford Arms afterwards, what he walks in to see is all for pics and chat. Still celebrating now. That's pretty special, isn't it, as well, you know, that happens.
The players went to the pub.
I do love that.
Wally certainly did. But you look at the one of the accusations early part of the season was the players did not seem to care as much as they should. Now, whatever that is, I don't know. You can't measure how much you care about something. But that was an accusation that some of the players did not care as much as they should. If you look at the scenes on the pitch at the end of the Luton game, or when the goal went in, that's a bunch of people who care about what they do.
Yeah, I think it's more not a matter of care.
That changed.
It's a matter of belief, isn't it? When you are turning up to games and you're not winning, it's not fun, is it?
It's
hard to motivate yourself for something that you don't enjoy. And, you know, football at the end of the day is their job.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not enjoying your job, nobody then goes out there to not try. It's just subconsciously sometimes you're then not at your best.
Yeah.
And then suddenly if the atmosphere around, you know, the football club changes, whether it is a management change or if just it's a result, you start enjoying your job more and subconsciously you do work harder. You know, and it seems like such an easy, obvious thing to say, but I don't think they were trying, a lack of trying. I think it's just a lack of belief.
It's partly that, and also the fact that, as you said, footballers, it's their job. So if you're 32 years old, you might have played for 8 different clubs.
Yeah.
And you don't support any of them. Well, if you look at our club, our starting 11, Will Nightingale, captain, Wimbledon fan.
Yeah.
Toby Sibbick, right back, Wimbledon fan. You've got Paul Callum Bye, who's been one of the players of the season for me in the last few months. Still a teenager, Wimbledon fan. Mm. Anthony Hartigan, midfield kind of maestro, Wimbledon fan, still a teenager. His dad's a season ticket holder. So you've got all these things.
But interestingly, all those...
It makes a difference because they do genuinely care. But look at Anthony Wordsworth. He's playing for his fourth team in a few years. He's just turned 30. He's not a Wimbledon fan. Although he did play for us as a kid, didn't he?
Yeah.
But it means things to these people. If you watch the celebrations after that, the celebrations yesterday, you see him in the dressing room, you see him on the team coach on the way home.
Yeah.
it matters. Well, care is probably the wrong word. It really does matter to the vast majority of that squad. It really mattered a lot to them, and that's what connects fans. You can see, it's like when you see your team score a last minute goal, and the manager's just standing there making a note. You want to see your manager jump
good,
up and down
good
and
goal.
Look. Yeah,
well done.
Yeah. Look at Southend yesterday. Look at if you watch the goals from Quest yesterday. Watch Kevin Bond's reaction to the two Southend goals. Didn't move. Yeah. Just stood there. Mm-hmm. I would want to see the manager jump up and down. I mean, look, whatever Alex Ferguson's faults, he did celebrate his team's goals. He didn't support Man United, but I just think I want to see a bit of connection, and that helps.
Yeah, but some of the players though you mentioned, they weren't particularly heavily involved earlier on in the season.
No, I was going to make that point.
Yeah, you know, your Sibics, Hartigan wasn't particularly.
Wasn't first choice.
We started first choice. But you got Callum Bailly again. You talked.
He's not part of the squad.
But obviously, Wally has identified something within them that he thinks that he's going to get more out of them.
Paul Callum Bailly made his debut. Well, he fought his first start on New Year's Day.
Yeah,
and he's been fantastic for us. You forget that because he's so big and strong and knows what he's doing. He's a teenager.
Yeah.
It's amazing. He's born. I think he's born in 2000, maybe late 99. Anthony Hartigan's born in 2000.
Yeah,
it's incredible because you see them, especially nowadays. These players have beards, and you kind of forget just how young they really are.
Oh yes,
but it's that connection. It's probably important at every club, but for our club, we've always gone on about the connection between the fans, and the disconnect was the word that was used this season. It's gone through the club, and I think now. Not blaming anybody in particular, one person, but I think with Joe Palmer in charge now, I think that connection is going to get stronger.
Okay, let's stay on that Joe Palmer thing. I have a tweet regarding him from Gary Keane. He says, guys, what do you think should be Joe Palmer's top three priorities for next season?
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a question.
Hello,
top,
Gary.
Top three priorities.
Gary was one of the people
by
the way.
You could do two or four. Just give some thoughts, Nick.
Well, as it's Gary, because I know that this was something that happened for those travelling up on the fun bus yesterday, I think the first thing that Joe Palmer needs to do is ban any form of neck cravat or silk scarf or anything, because Wally needs to sort that out.
Yeah, right, I didn't wear mine, actually. I did bring one.
I'm not surprised.
But Gary Keane was resplendent in a very pleasant cravat.
Well, I'm sure Gary's got that aura about him. He's the sort of man that I can see pulling it off.
He does pull off a cravat very well. So, but he was wearing a bespoke T-shirt underneath that, which had the Great Escape on it, which he didn't reveal until he got into the...
Very good.
Well, I was gonna, not on the pitch. Until he got...
celebrating
afterwards. Yeah.
Okay. But no, for Joe, I mean... I don't know exactly what the situation... We don't know what the situation with Wally's contract is, whether it was an end-of-season thing, and then we're going to judge it. I assume the first priority will be sorting that out and sorting that situation out. Similarly, head of recruitment is a priority because Nick Dawes, we believe, was only a temporary appointment, wasn't it, until at least the end of the season. So we need to... If that is now club policy, that's come from the club owners. That's what we need. That's what we want. So that position, that role needs to be sorted. So we also have to think about Glyn Hodges. We have to discuss whether we want a director. All these... things that we've been talking about all season, this is the time now where decisions have to be made. I assume this week is going to be the week we hear about players that have been released and retained and contract situations and all that business. But I don't know how you do that before you've actually established what your management structure is. And I think that's the first thing, is to crystallise exactly what our football staff management staff is. Structure, there we go.
Now we've established which division we're in. That helps.
Exactly, that always helps.
So I think tie Wally down to a contract, tie Glyn Hodges down to a contract, sort out who's going to be a director of recruitment. But we think Nick Dawes was brought in not as a director of recruitment for outside, but of which players we keep inside. I think that was because he came in after the transfer window shut. So
it's kind of
strange, isn't it? What are we doing with that then? Because he can find a player to recruit, but by June he might have gone somewhere else.
I think that's part of the thing. I think you're right. Yeah. I think it was sort of putting in the behind the scenes work, the planning work in terms of databasing and scouting, how you go about finding players and perhaps generating some form of initial list without actually going out and setting specific targets just yet. The other thing in terms of Gary's question would be to make sure, Joe Palmer, that every single time we play away from home and there's not a clash of kits, that we play in blue. Because clearly it has worked at Oxford and Bradford without any issue. So, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of Nick's bugbears, isn't it? Your bête noir, the fact that we wear our noir kit.
It's the fact that we change the kit when we don't need to. It's one of these things that's crept into football.
Brighton today.
Brighton
wore green at Arsenal.
What's that about?
Where are you blue and white?
I don't think it matters.
Oh, my word.
I know, I do. I agree with
it's tradition. Imagine if Leicester just started randomly wearing pink at home games or something, because that would be the next thing.
We've actually got a pink kit for next season.
I'm quite jealous. I do want a pink kit.
We actually generally do.
Do you?
Yeah, and I'm 100% buying it.
Oh, I would. Yeah. I've been wanting a pink kit for a long time.
Okay.
But only for occasions.
We can adopt Leicester for next season.
They can be my... I don't know how many teams I've got now, like 8, I think. But they could be my 9th team.
Well, we do have a new third kit this season, do we not?
We do.
And we know what colour it is.
It's
not pink.
It's not pink.
Well, no. I can't reveal. I can't reveal what colour it is.
You can't reveal. No. I'm not going
to
say anything.
Do no revealing. Right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we've got a call in. We'll head over to the phone lines. Love Sport. Yeah, welcome back. AFC Wimbledon fan show until 9 p.m. So only about 15 or so minutes left to get in those calls and tweets. Mark has called in. He's on the phone now. Very good evening, Mark.
Yeah, good evening. Great show, as always.
Thank you, Mark.
Three things. If I could make 3 points.
Go on.
Please. Well, number one, I want to pay homage to Wally and Glyn. How they turn this around, I do not know. And it isn't just the goalie. Obviously, he is a massive thing. But to pick the players off the floor from what he inherited, to see that some people needed to be dropped, some of the more experienced players, and to play to the youth. He might have stumbled across the 3 at the back, but there were certain changes. You can see it. We didn't see the ball being passed around at the back so slowly under the new regime. It went longer. He needs massive credit. I remember phoning up just before the Walsall game last year, the one we won, which was kind of setting us up for survival, and saying whatever happened before this, Ardley had to go. I think what was shown, and my second point is this must never happen again. And by that I mean we can't be so slow to react to a managerial change that needs to happen. And secondly, we've got to get the recruitment right. And the last couple of years, recruitment has been dire. Let's not beat about the bush. And we were so slow to react. And then the third thing, which is to do with the recruitment and retention of players, is who the people think should go. I've got a list here, but I'll ask you first who you think should go.
Blimey.
Yeah, go on, chaps.
Who should go? I mean, sadly, two of our best players this season have been the lone players. Aaron Ramsdale said probably not going to come back. It's a shame. Steve Seddon, we understand.
I think Seddon as well. He's been magnificent.
He's been great. I think he's been so good.
Perrington was good, but Seddon's
he's a different level. So we understand that Birmingham may want him in their squad for next season. He's been that impressive. He's been fine. Jake Jervis will be gone. That did not work at all. I think you're probably looking at some of the younger players, but maybe Alfie Egan, maybe his time might be up. I don't know. That'd be unfortunate.
I think Eagle, the right winger, what's his name? The Albanian guy,
Edney Carja, he may go too. Yeah. You're probably looking at Andy Bartram.
I've got Soares, but this is my list. See what you think. Soares, Bartram, the 2 that you've mentioned.
Yep.
Obviously, Deji, Apaya. Probably Hanson. McDonald as well in goal. I don't know. Maybe they'll have him as just a backup.
Yeah, that's possibly true. The thing with Kwesi Appiah is he does have 1 more year of his contract. So we'd have to loan him out or sell him. What are we going to get for him? James Hanson's an unusual one. I mean, obviously when we got him, the idea was he'd come down to London, live in London, bring his family with him. Now, I'm not sure if his family didn't come or if they came and went back because they didn't like it. But he's been living on his own. And he's been, we understand he's on after a game, we'll go back home up north and we'll come back on a Tuesday. But you have to forget these people are human beings. Yeah, and they're away from their wife and kids.
I had no idea that was the case. It does make things completely different, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, his injuries, he may well have been injured, but with a happy family around him, maybe you don't dwell on it so much. He's at home by himself in the evenings, not socialising with the rest of the players. Thinking about his injury, I totally get it. People forget that these people are not machines, and they do have feelings, and they miss their kids. Mm. And I can see him going back to Bradford. I can see him maybe even retiring, doing something else. But I don't think your list is personally. I don't think your list is too far off.
Mark, just one quick question then before we let you go. Just on the whole survival, do you think this could be a platform now for Wimbledon to have a much stronger season next?
I'm much more confident with Towns as manager. I think it was to Nick once on the phone that I actually did say that I thought Downs would be a good choice after Abassi being a temporary in charge. This was at the Walsall time. Mm-hmm. So I was a Downs advocate. I used to see little tweaks, you know, midfield slightly push up a little bit further. There's more crosses in the box. They don't muck around at the back. I think we've heard from other people that he's simplified matters. I think he doesn't take any, you know, fools lightly. So he's he will say it as it is. Plus, I think he's far, far better, I think, for things like morale and stuff like that. You can see he's galvanised the team from an awful position. So I'm more confident, but we've got to get the recruitment right. That's in the short term, that's the number one priority, because the last two transfers, probably before the one in January, but have been shocking.
Yeah.
And that's got to be sorted out. Hopefully whoever's spotting these players will get that right. And secondly, the big learning curve, as I said 5 minutes ago, whatever it was, is that we cannot let a situation where clearly a manager is failing to go on so long. And for me, that it was ridiculous how long. I'm afraid Neil stayed in the job.
Yeah.
I think we can all tend to agree with that. Mark, thank you very much for the call, mate. Cheers, appreciate it. Really top stuff. Okay, let's go back to the tweets then. Dean's been in touch. He says he ran on the pitch yesterday, screamed like a nutcase. Question to you two is, who do you think will be leaving the club before next season? Connie Womble. So again, very obviously similar to what Mark said. He listed off some players.
Yeah.
Now, is it a long list? Is there going to be wholesale changes, or do you think you both made, Nick? Yeah, shook your head. Kevin, you nodded.
I'm not sure. It depends what you mean by long, doesn't it? Length is very subjective.
It's not all about length.
Well, I don't. I'm very short. Well, reasonably short. I'm actually average height, but compared to
all right, height. Sorry, right.
Thank you. I'm just short for my weight, but I think there is going to be. We've used the word cull, haven't we, on the various times the last few years, where the players, like 10, 12, 13 players go in the summer.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have that in terms of first-teamers.
I don't see, because when Mark was asking the question earlier, so I was just looking up the list of what I believe is the players that are out of contract coming into the season, and I think a number of these will be going. So Bartram, we expect, will go.
Yeah.
Carja. Yeah. McDonnell is out of contract, which is an interesting one.
Yeah.
Oshilaju, I expect, will go. When we could have got $500,000 roughly for him if we'd sold him in August. Never mind.
Yep.
Tom Saw's out of contract. I imagine that won't be renewed. Tyler Bury is another one. On top of that, you've got, like you say, you've got the Hansen situation. You've got the Quezzy situation. Don't know what's exactly going on there. You've got players like, I'm not sure what McLaughlin, I don't know what's going to happen with someone like McLaughlin. I don't know.
When he made a fairly decent impact, didn't he? Not
at the very
in the
start.
Beginning. Yeah, yeah. I say at not at the level of the others, but a young player that you think, you know, if the deal was right, it'd be worthwhile
it depends
sticking around.
What Wally sees in him and Dylan Connie, and whether he sees that he can develop them further, because I think they came in and made a really good first impression. But they've drifted away slightly. But probably not the most expensive, so probably room for them in the squad. Someone like Wagstaff, who knows what is going to happen with Scott Wagstaff? I don't know. I think it could be. I think we talked about different things that have worked for Wally and what he's changed. And I know I've banged on about the goalkeeper, and please don't think I'm saying it's just purely because the goalkeeper. There's a lot to it. And we talked about the formation change as well. And I think one of the key things about the formation change is you had three centre-halves. We played with three centre-halves and three centre midfielders. And I think part of the reason he did that is because I don't think it's his preferred formation. I think he didn't think he had the quality of player to be able to play two centre-halves and two centre midfielders. I think he felt they didn't have... Mm-hmm. I think he needed that extra security solidity of having three of them in those positions. Because if we was to play 4-4-2, who would your two centre midfielders be? I think we'd be very weak, if I'm being honest with you, if you only went with the current setup with two centre midfielders. And I think that'll be an area where he'll be looking to strengthen. And that again means, what happens to Wagstaff and McLaughlin and Pinnock? I don't know. I mean, Pinnock's flattered to deceive a little bit as well.
Pinnock is the proverbial curate's egg of a player, isn't he? That people want him in the team. And he gets on for a few minutes, and you think, oh, yeah, that's why he's not playing.
No, we've all got them. we've only got 5 or so minutes left of tonight's show. I do want to kind of almost do a bit of a summary end of season kind of thing. We know what the highlight is, right? Yesterday, that's a given. Or is it? Or is Luton actually?
Don't forget we beat West Ham in this cup this season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, okay. Yeah. No, maybe not an obvious question.
But we did a Facebook live on the coach yesterday, and Stuart Deacon said that the highlight of the season was him was Aaron Ramsdale signing a piece of paper to join us on loan. That was the highlight of the season because that's what changed it. And I'm going to go with him.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right, but game. Give us a game. Oh, it has to be. West Ham, Luton, and yesterday. They're the three, right?
They're the three that come to my mind. Yeah. Luton will be the one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty epic scenes, wasn't
it? I'm going to go for West Ham only because I think it gave the players belief that they can actually do this.
Yeah.
Because you think the week or 3 days before, we lost a home to Fleetwood 3-0, and it was the only home game I've missed this season. But it was, for all reports, it was one of the worst performances
ever
of any Wimbledon team of all time.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, we're going to get hammered on Saturday. And all of a sudden, 4 days later, we're beating West Ham 4-2 and deserving to beat them. I think it just gave the players a bit of belief, and they've carried that on. And we've had a few blips at Burton home game, which was horrific. By and large, you know, said one defeat in 12 end of the season. That's decent form.
It's not bad going, is it?
And that's not, and that's partly due, I think, to the West Ham, performance. Or it just gave the fans something, it gave the players something, and it was just a great night for me. That was a definite highlight.
Yeah.
I've got kind of key moments here, and what did Wally do to keep us up? Can we have answers that don't include the name Aaron Ramsdale?
Yeah, okay. Belief. I'll go with belief again. Belief. He instilled something in those players that Neil Ardley was not able to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's not criticising Neil. He just didn't have it.
Some people are motivators and some people have kind of an infectious character. Do you think Wally is one of them? You know, he's got that infectious personality about him. He's very different to Neil.
He's definitely. I think most people would like Neil because he's a nice chap.
Yeah.
Wally, it does not care one way or the other whether you like him or not.
But you don't need to like your can also talk about work situations. Yeah. And we've all probably had various managers in our working careers, some probably better than others, some you liked more than others, but ultimately some of them are better than others.
Yeah.
You
He's know? Just
and
very
Wally,
good at that.
Wally appears to be a good leader of men.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he is. You know, I think that I don't know whether he likes the kind of player that he was.
Yeah.
He wasn't the greatest player of all time. He did play in the old First Division. He was a Premiership player in that sense. He had it, and just be fair, he wasn't that great a player, but he had everything you want in a footballer. And I think he sees someone who does that.
Yeah.
But I think he will definitely be in Wally's plans if he can see something of himself in you, I think.
And I also think there's something to be said about the average age of the team. And I think what we've also seen is we've seen an increase. Hard work is one of the key things.
Yeah.
Energy. And a lot. The team is a lot more energetic under Wally. It's also a lot younger. And it's sometimes easier to motivate younger players. Mm. It's like when you're a teacher. I've taught the whole spectrum. And it's easier to motivate 5-year-olds than it is sometimes 15-year-olds because they've been there, done it. They're more disaffected. I mean, you've got those younger players, Cannonby, Hartigan, Sibic, Seddon, Ramsdale, Thomas, we haven't even mentioned. Joe Piggott's still relatively young, we've not even mentioned. I think sometimes you can easily get them to work, put that extra little bit of shift in because they've got that youth about them.
Let's not dwell on this one. Low light.
Bizarrely, apart from the Fleetwood game and the Burton games that you mentioned, Haringey. I was furious after Haringey when we won. I've never...
It was 1-0 in the wind.
1-0, 87th minute winner. I don't think I'll ever not celebrate an 87th minute winner ever again. But yeah, that was I was furious.
Yeah, no, that was a strange one, wasn't it? Yeah. And it was hard to be excited about winning it and then being through to the next round. Kevin, any kind of swerve balls on that one?
Yeah.
Any more left field ones?
The odd one was the Oxford home game that we won.
Yeah, yes. No, I remember that one as well. That was a very strange show. We did not win 2-0.
We won 2-1.
And you were also kind of...
It was awful. It was awful.
Yeah.
We should have lost that by 5 or 6 goals. It's just something happened in that match where you think, well, you've won. People who don't like football go, wait, but you won. Yeah, we did, but we didn't deserve it. It was awful. There was something not right.
Yeah.
That hadn't been right for some time, and that was the game it came to a head. And I can't put my finger on what it was, but that was definitely... It was a low light that kind of spurred everything else on. I think we probably wouldn't be here today.
No.
Or we'd be... we probably would be here today.
Show.
We wouldn't be dead, but
well,
it'd be a very, very different show had that not happened.
Okay, then, last question. It's, of course, not probably the way you foresaw the season going, but ultimately, has it been a success? Because you are in League One.
Under Wally, yes. Overall, no.
Yeah. I'd agree. I think we're in League One for a fourth year, fourth successive season, which is some achievement for a club of our size.
Yeah.
It's imperative that we're in League One when we move to our new ground. So next season is crucial. But yeah, I think it's a moderate success. We made money.
Yeah. This season.
That's Andy.
Chaps, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yes, thank you.
We're back next week and
I'm back.
I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.